Everybody loves chalupas. Everybody loves them now. If you're in the mood for chalupas, I'm the one to show you how. Or something like that. I used to try to start like every other episode with that song, but it's been long enough that I've forgotten how the song goes. Because that means it's time for me to write a new song. This is Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast. And because I record these and then just edit them, not in an order, but whenever I feel like it, and put them out in almost a random order, it's sometimes hard to know when I'm repeating myself. It's sometimes hard to know when I'm referring to things that you haven't heard me say before. Suffice it to say, there are episodes of the Rish Outcast that I recorded over a year ago that you've not heard. And there are probably episodes I will record after the one I'm doing right now that you will hear before this one. But this one that I'm recording right now is summer 2016. And I've had some hard times recently and worries a little bit about the future and what's going to happen. And the specter of self-doubt, self-loathing, self-immolation, you know, has been creeping up. And I struggle sometimes to stay positive, to keep going forward, especially because, you know, my worst enemy is not, you know, my neighbor or my rival at the company or anything like that. It's myself. And it's awful hard to get away from yourself, guys. Regardless, I have a friend, Big Anklevich, that I get together with. It used to be every single Monday night. Now that it's summer, he does other things. He's got a family. He's got family, what do you call them? Family reunions, trips. There's more of a demand on his time. So lately we've been getting together about every other week. And he works a lot. He works one of those jobs where there are times when I want to call him. And, you know, I call him anyway. But he can't talk. You know, he can't pick up the phone. So it's frustrating sometimes, or it's rough, or I don't know. I'm complaining for no reason, because it's good to have a friend. And yesterday we got together. We hung out. We ate. We went to the park. We walked around. We walked all around his neighborhood in the middle of the night, like we used to do. We recorded a story. We talked about the podcast. We went to a store, went to the book section of the store, and we were just looking at books. And he said, when you look at all these books that are for sale, does it make you want to write? Does it make you want to work harder to get your own work out there so that one day we can walk into a store and there's your book? And I said, no. Although I think it probably does affect him in that way. And yeah, that sort of thing might be really neat to experience, to walk into a bookstore and there's three copies of your book. Or, you know, it might not even, you know, if you've really made it, it's not a bookstore. It's just a grocery store or a Walmart or something like that. And there in the book section, there's your book. I think that would feel really good. Would be exciting. But I told him, no, what makes me want to write is I finished another one of those E.C. Tubb Doomrest books that I do the audio for, and I sort of felt like, okay, well, let me take on a new project, a new audiobook project. And so I went to the titles that are open for auditions for readers, for narrators to perform their books. And I had told myself I wasn't going to do royalty share anymore, which basically just means you don't get paid to do it. You split the proceeds. A quarter of the proceeds go to you. A quarter of the proceeds go to the author of the book. Half of the proceeds go to audible.com, which when I put it that way, ooh, sounds pretty shitty. But it didn't used to always be that way. I think there was third, third, and third. And you know, that's not great, but it's certainly better than 50% going to Audible. But I had told myself that I would not do royalty share anymore, because there are books out there that I have recorded that are out there for people to buy, and no one has ever bought. And I did so much work on those books. And you know, there are a couple out there that I probably did more work than the person that wrote the book, which is not an attempt to toot my own horn, but an attempt to give the middle finger to the writer of the book. Anyway, kids, I had decided I would try and just do work for hire from now on. You know, somebody is paying me to do an audiobook, and so I will do that. So I went on there, and I was looking for books that were up for audition, where they were paying a rate, and they needed a male narrator. And I am not exaggerating. Zero results came up. Not a goddamn thing, Sir Fake Samuel L. Jackson might say. Wow, guys. Wow. But such is life. So I went, what do you do with when you have your tail between your legs and you go back to something? I went slinking back to the royalty share portion of the auditions page, where there are hundreds, if not thousands, of books that wanted a male narrator, you know, to do this work for nothing, pretty much. And I looked through two pages of books holding auditions, and I only ended up clicking on two books from the whole list, well, from two pages of the list. I read the descriptions of those two books. Not only did I not audition for those two books, I didn't bother to proceed to the step before I audition, which is go onto Amazon and read what people have said about these two books. I didn't even get that far. And I told him that, even though it was a long story, that made me want to write. That made me want to put my work out there. That made me want to work harder on my own career, seeing something like that. Now, I hope I don't come across as arrogant, because for some reason, that's one of my big fears. And yet, maybe that's what I'm saying there, is I didn't see anybody's work out there that attracted me more than just my own work would. And thing is, if I produce my own audiobook, then I split the proceeds with Audible, because I'm not splitting it with an author. I'm the author. Anyhow, listened to me tell that story, and he said, dude, you need to stop looking for other people's works for you to produce. You need to stop doing Doomerest of Terra books for no money. You need to put your own stuff out there. He said, you need to work on releasing one of your stories like every week. And every time you have six stories or seven stories or whatever, you need to put those in a collection and have that up for sale, because you have so many stories, you could have 10 collections in no time without writing another word of just stuff that you have written up to this point. And for the next 15 minutes, 20 minutes, we talked about that and talked about how many stories do you put in a collection? Do you create a collection that has sort of a mix of, okay, there's a horror story and there's a sci-fi story and there's a kid coming of age story and maybe a Western story in there and something that's funny? Or do you put together all the stories that I've written about witches in the same collection and all the stories I've written about evil children in the same collection? And I don't know that there's an, or maybe there is an answer, but we didn't settle on an answer in that discussion. I just asked the question and we talked about it. We ended up talking about it for a long, long time. We went back to his house. We sat on the porch at night and just talked. And he talked about how his stumbling block is that he never writes. But my stumbling block is that it's not that. I write all the time. But I don't tend to put out the stuff that I write. And he said, you know, if you put out everything that you've got on your computer, all typed up and ready to go, and each one of those things sold a copy a month or two copies in a month, you could make a living from your writing. You wouldn't need a job. And I don't know, guys, it was just so cool to hear him say that, for him to encourage me in that way and say, you know, you need to do this. And we talked about cover art for a long, long time. And he's like, I'll do the cover art. I know you don't like that. I'll do it. Just tell me what you want and I'll do it. Send it to me. It got me fired up. It got me excited and feeling positive in a way that I hadn't been in a while. And he said, what do you got going on tomorrow? He says, I want you to take an hour and work on a collection of your stories. Just an hour. It's like, if you put an hour aside every single day working on these things, you could sell a novel-length piece in no time. And that's where the money is in stuff that's 6 hours on Audible, stuff that's 8 hours, stuff that's worth spending a whole credit on Audible, or, you know, that's more than a dollar, or whatever you charge for your stories. And he said, you know, in addition to doing the covers, I'll help promote them. I'll get on Facebook and say, hey, he wrote this and it's out there and you need to go buy it. And it really was words I needed to hear. And I've tried with Big for the last couple of years to be that guy for him, to be the guy that says, okay, hey, you need to do this, or I challenge you to do this, or really, I like this idea, I think you should write it, or damn you, you suck, man. Why can't you write this? You're pathetic, man. You know, I've tried all these different tacks and they never work. But have him do the same thing to me, I feel like it did work. And I certainly did spend an hour or more this morning putting the finishing touches on the first collection. In fact, I've got it ready to go in text form. I mean, I had really put that collection together so that I could sell it as audio. And so there's that. Anyhow, I did that, and I grabbed a picture that I was going to use for a cover. In fact, I used it for a cover. And Big has a way of making covers with the exact same elements that I have, but his are somehow dynamic. His jump off the page, his live in a way that I feel like mine don't. And so, you know, he's got a talent there, and I think that that's neat. And I did send him that cover, and it'd be interesting to see what he does with it. I mean, I hope he gets it back to me, because that file is just sitting there waiting to be published, and it just needs a cover. Having this, the Outcast, as I've said before, is a free therapy session, and it's also, you know, an opportunity to speak my mind, and whatever happens to be on it, I can express and maybe share it with people. Maybe people get to know me better. Maybe they get to like my work or my sense of humor or me better. But I really ought to put more of my stuff on this podcast. Part of the reason that I don't, though, is because if I go to all the work of recording it and then editing it, trying to take out all the little mouth sounds and every single time I sniffle, it's so much work that I might as well put it out there where there's a dollar sign attached to it. And I wonder if I put out a collection of just stories that I had podcast for free, if it would sell any less than a collection that's all stories that are new. Because I don't know who's buying my stuff. I mean, I know there are people like Tom out there that are my fans that really appreciate the stuff that I write. But there's probably strangers out there too that, I don't know, they stumbled upon the title by accident Or maybe they were on Smashwords, and yeah, I've got some stories that are just free on Smashwords, and they were looking for free stories, and they said, oh, okay, this guy's got something. And they read it, and I don't know, maybe they liked it enough to read another free story, or maybe they liked it enough to look for a story that wasn't free, and they paid a buck for that, or whatever the deal was. I don't know, because people don't often get in touch with me and say, hey, I read this story, and I thought it was good, or hey, F you. I hope that somebody burns you to the ground. Actually, I'm kind of happy that people don't send me the latter. I'm not sure that I need that sort of thing in my life. Who does, though? You know what I mean? Do you need somebody threatening to burn you? Anyway, I was hoping to introduce a story and put it on here with this conversation. But maybe it's better to just release this as is and say, this is me feeling positive, feeling like I need to take better control of my career, work a little harder on putting it out there. I mean, you know me, I'm always trying to write more. I'm always, oh, you know, I didn't write today or yesterday. I suck. But it's probably equally important to say, okay, I wrote that. It's still sitting. I just need to come up with a cover. I need to format it. I need to put it out there. And then somebody somewhere might discover it. Somebody somewhere might appreciate it. You know how it is. Okay, folks, this is me again months later. There's a line in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Shorty says, I keep telling you, you listen to Short Round more, you live longer. I'm recording this little addendum because time has passed. I took Big's advice a little bit. I produced some of my own work, started doing my own collections of audio. But whenever I had some extra time on my hands, which does happen every once in a while, I would look and I would see if there was something I could audition for. And anyhow, I've learned my lesson. Let's go back. A few years ago, people used to ask me, and they'd ask Big occasionally, to narrate stories for their podcasts. Because, you know, that's what we did, and we had experience, and we would edit them ourselves. And hopefully we had the reputation that we were easy to work with, we were fast, and we were quality. Easy to work with, and we were quality are much more important than fast, in my opinion, but, you know. And one time, I got this story. Big was there, and before I got my microphone set up and the pop filter and all the things that I'm not currently using right now, before I started doing audiobooks, the only time I could record something was when I would go over to his house. Because he had these nice microphones and a good setup and quality and a mixer. And so whenever somebody would ask us to do a story, we would do it that way. In fact, I remember in those days, there were times when they would ask me or they would ask him to do a story, and we'd just do it together. You know, it'd be Big Anklevich and Rish Outfield alternating voices and stuff. Just because it's like, well, hey, you asked one, you get both. But this time, there was a story, and I was reading it, narrating it. I didn't read it beforehand because my policy was just, if somebody asks me to do something, I will do it. And I will do the best that I can, whether I like the story or not. If it was something that I liked, well then, yeah, maybe I would mention it on the show, or I would do a blog post about it or something like that. But if I didn't like it, I wouldn't say anything. But this story was rough. It was about child murder and molestation. And I'm not going to say that it was pro-child molestation, but it wasn't inherently anti-child molestation either. It was the darkest piece
I had ever read up to that point. And there were a couple of moments when I looked up while we were doing it, and I'd be like, whoa, dude, how do I, wow. And Big was just like, yeah, I'm just here to tell you if you screw up a line, I'm not here to tell you how to perform this. Anyway, I made it through to the end. And, you know, if somebody sent that to us at the Doonstief, not only would we not accept that story, we would never accept anything from this person again. It was just, I guess dark is the word that I'm going to use. Marshall Latham introduced me to this term, grim dark. And I don't know what grim dark is. I actually looked it up after he defined it, because I was like, well, surely it's got to be more exact than what Marshall says. Because Marshall defined it like you would define obscenity. I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it. And sure enough, grimdark in the dictionary was very similar to that. It's like, well, you know, it has these elements, not limited to, but probably including some of these. And very nebulous, very useless dictionary entry. Anyway, this was not grimdark. I don't know. I'm not a poet. I can't tell you what this story was, but it made me feel unclean. And when it came time to edit it, to send to them, I sent Big an email while I was editing, and I was just like, wow, I had forgotten. I mean, you'd think I couldn't forget, but I had forgotten. There's this moment when I looked up and I was just like, oh man, dude. And you said something like, yeah, I can't help you. And I was just like, I had forgotten that it was, holy cow, I feel dirty. But, you know, I had said I would do it, and so I edited it, and I sent it to the podcast, to the magazine. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I was just like, look, I'm not going to do anything for these guys again. I'm just going to tell them I'm too busy or something like that. But, and now this is the part that I hesitate to tell you, they never ran it. They closed up shop, and that podcast, I don't know if you'd call it pod faded or just died, but it went away, and that episode never saw the light of day. And part of me is grateful because, ew. But another part of me is like, dude, I had to suffer and then suffer again in editing it. And you didn't use it? Not cool, guys. See, that sounds like Woody Allen saying, oh, the food in this restaurant is terrible. Yes, and in such small portions. Maybe it's best that that never saw the light of day. But it would have been best had the editor read that story before he sent it to me and thought, oh, dude, this is not something we're going to run on our show. Oh, why would I make somebody read this and then edit it? So that was, until yesterday, that was the benchmark, low point. That was the nadir of my experience with this narration stuff. Cut to 2017. I foolishly accepted some work to do an audiobook. I hadn't read it. I went onto Amazon and I read all of the reviews. I started with the negative reviews because, you know, I'm in it for the long haul. It takes a long time to do an audiobook. It's really in depth. You have to internalize the characters, figure out a voice that you're going to do for each one of them and stuff. It's a commitment. And so I like to be at least a little bit informed. I'll go in and I'll read the reviews. And if there's one that mentions like a lot of typos or errors in the manuscript, I usually won't do it. I've made that mistake in the past where I'm not only the narrator, but I'm the editor as well. And kids, they're not paying me at all to do that. So this one, the only negatives were somebody had a problem with one of the characters' motivations, and I thought, well, that's okay. That's fine. You know, everybody has their own barometer. That was the lowest review. You know what I mean by lowest? That was the most negative review on there was somebody that didn't like the main character, and all of their sympathies went away because the character was a certain way. And I thought, you know, I can live with that. That's fine. I probably won't feel that way. And so I accepted it and had been working on it. And I found a couple of things that I didn't particularly like, but that's not my job to particularly like everything. This is a job to narrate. It's a job to breathe life into the characters, to breathe life into the voices of the characters, to do the best I can to bring the story to life. It's an acting job, basically. You know, you get a job as an actor, and maybe it's not very well written. And so it's your job to make those lines come alive as much as you can. And we've all seen actors that shine in little parts. You go, wow, that's weird. And you know, that stuff wasn't on the page, etc. I was doing that, and I kept getting this... It's difficult. See, I don't want to badmouth anything, really. I mean, I guess I've made the mistake of badmouthing Brandon Sanderson, but he doesn't need my help. And he's a fine writer, even if I didn't like one of his books. But usually I try to be nebulous. Usually I try to be vague. And in this case, it's hard to be vague because there was an aspect to the book, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the short story that I told you about that had child molestation and child murder in it. Except for in this case, I guess you could call it a fetish or a fixation on the writer's part. But it was so overt. That it can't be a fetish anymore. You know what I mean? It becomes an obsession. It becomes the foundation upon which this piece seems to have been written. And it bothered me. It was something that made me scratch my head at first. But then I got to this chapter yesterday, and it just stopped me in my tracks. I stopped being the narrator, and I became an innocent bystander, a witness to what was going on. And I was just like, no, dude, don't do that. Oh my gosh, no. I cannot. Yeah, my sympathy for the character, my tolerance for the characters stopped. Let's say that it was cannibalism. Let's say that there was a book and it was not only about cannibalism, but it was endorsing cannibalism. It was talking about how just fudging great cannibalism is, how delicious human flesh is, especially if it comes from a baby. And let's say that maybe you had a problem with that. And then you get to a chapter where the baby is kidnapped and the mother is forced to watch as the baby is sliced up and cooked and eaten. Hopefully you can understand how I felt, where I was just like, no, dude, don't do this. Oh my gosh. And yeah, I was sick. I stopped probably for 5 minutes and the recorder just recorded while I reeled in horror at this. And I was like, how am I going to perform this? How? And this was chapter, if I had to guess, it was chapter 15 or 16. So that meant there was X number of hours laid out before, hours of work that I had already gone through. Because, you know, I tend to record a couple of chapters and then I edit those chapters. And while I'm editing those chapters, I get the characters' voices in my head again. And then I record a couple more chapters. And that's the process that I do it at. And maybe it's not the best process, but that's how I've chosen to do most of them. And so in this point, you know, I had 11 or 12 chapters all edited, which is just tons of work. And then I get to chapter 15 or 16 and this happens. And I think a stronger man than me would have said, nope, that's it, done. I'm not going to waste any more time with this. This is wrong. And I said that on the recording. I remember I just paused and I was like, dude, no, this is wrong. This is the worst thing I have ever read. And isn't that amazing to hit that point where you're just like, I've never, this is a new low. And I guess I sort of numbed myself and said, all right, let's just work through to the end. I at one point I did the math. I looked to see at what point in the book I was, you know, how close to done I was. And I was close. I was like 84% done with the reading or whatever. And so I was able to justify. I was able to let a bit of my soul die to honor this commitment that I'd made, or so that it wasn't wasted time, was probably what it was. I mean, I can't wait until I have to edit that chapter, because then I'm going to feel worse, because I'm going to be like, oh, here was the moment when I compromised my integrity. Here was the moment when I said, well, I said I would do it, and I'm doing it now, and hell's a-popping. So I did that. And then I went back and I just finished the book. I went through it as fast as I could. And I said that I numbed myself. I think it's possible you can actually hear that in my performance. When Big and I were in college together, he had a catchphrase, you know, sort of verse, his version of what you're talking about, Willis, and dynamite, and kiss my grits, you know, etc. And his was, don't be a sellout. He would say that, don't be a sellout. Hey, don't be a sellout. Hey, sellout, how you doing? If he weren't so damn handsome, it would probably not have been endearing. It would bother me that he would say it again and again and again, but I certainly know what a sellout is. Somebody that abandons their principles for the bottom line, for a dollar sign, for a makeout session with their own first cousin. Sorry, I don't know where that came from. Anyhow, there was a part where I was supposed to be really emotional, crying and pleading, and I don't think that I gave it my all in the past. Like on Journey of a Sidekick, I actually strummed up real tears. You know, I worked myself into an emotional frenzy. And in this case, I just wasn't going to do it. I was just like, you know, I had clocked in. My time card had been stamped, or whatever you call it. I was going to work my shift. And then, you know, not a minute more. Not a single bit beyond what I had contracted to do. So, yeah, I just sort of worked through it. I didn't cry in reality. For other audiobooks, maybe I'd do a couple of different versions of an emotional scene in case one was too much, or in case the second one I could make it sound more realistic, you know, with a quaver in my voice or, you know, that kind of stuff. But in this one, I just put my head down and I barreled through to the end. I think I finished the entire book on the next recording session because I wanted to be rid of it. I didn't want it in my hands anymore. I did the rote performance once through, and maybe there are stumbles in there or, you know, the wrong word, but I wasn't willing. I'm not willing to go back and do it again, fix it. And, you know, I consider myself to be a professional, maybe not a consummate professional, but somebody, you know, it's like I have the job, I'm going to do the job. But in this case, it's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to fulfill the terms of my contract and nothing more. And I just sort of forced myself through it, gave myself a couple hours after that, and then finished the book. I reached the line that everybody has. And, you know, I'm probably able to take things that other people would be like, you know what? No, I'm not going to do this. Maybe even without blinking, I'd be like, yeah, oh yeah, I'm fine with saying that or performing that, where other people would head for the hills. And conversely, there are probably people out there whose palates are much tougher than mine, who can just eat garbage and it doesn't make them sick. You know, that sounds like I'm being critical of those people. Everybody has a moral barometer. Everybody has a line in the sand. And I happened to have discovered mine yesterday, reached mine. And it makes me wonder if this episode is even remotely entertaining for you to listen to. You know, I'm not going to mark this as an overshare, although I could, because there are a couple episodes out there that are just waiting in the wings that I haven't dared edit. They're out there and it's like, gosh, that's going to be hard. There's one that I recorded where I talk about the realization that I was a disappointment to my parents, that I didn't fulfill my potential in life. And yeah, nobody's going to enjoy listening to that one. But I recorded it. And there's another one that I recorded months and months ago, and it just still sits because I'm afraid to edit it. But why did I record them if not to put them out there? I mean, it would be like the awful story that I did that work with, and then, you know, it went nowhere. Maybe it makes me a stronger person. Maybe it, you know, builds up intellectual muscle or something like that. But then the next book on my docket, if you will, on my schedule, was Jaeger Thunder by Abigail Hilton. And in that case, A, I was being paid to do the book, so it wasn't just a giant waste of my time. And then B, it's a really, really solid book, a good book. And so it was like going from, you know, having a meal covered in flies and God knows what to, hey, look, a brand new Thai restaurant opened up. Let's go to it, honey. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not. To me, fast food is nice. You know, I would rather have fast food than pretty much anything. It tastes good to me. Sorry, where the hell did that come from? Oh, but the specter of Big Anklevich's words came back to me while I was doing that awful, awful book. Not the Don't Be a Sellout, but from now on, you should always do your audiobook. Do your own audiobooks. You should not do anybody else's, certainly not for free. And I thought, you know, if I had taken his advice in 2015, probably when he gave it, it might have been early 2016 that he said it, I would have been spared this unpleasant experience. I guess let that be a lesson to me. In case I haven't made the point, now it is a rule. I am done doing audiobooks for free or for royalty share. No more. I'm going to focus on my own audiobooks. And I suppose I'll still do stories for podcasts. Like I did one for Cast of Wonders the other day. And I did one for Farfetched Fables by David Morrell, the guy who wrote The Name of the Rose and First Blood, which I quote often. Nothing is over, nothing! That's kind of cool. I'll continue to do those, although at some point, do you remember when I did an episode where I talked about my uncle saying to him his time was more valuable than his money? He was probably around my age when he told me that. But once I get to that point where my time is more valuable than money, then I'm going to have to say, well, hey, the podcast stuff is going to stop too. It's just going to be the Rish Outcast and then stuff for money. Because, you know, at this point, there is money involved in the Rish Outcast. I mean, it's amazing that there are Patreon supporters who like to hear what I'm doing right now. And I'm glad. I'm super glad. If you're listening to this and you'd like to become one, you can sign up for as cheap as $1 an episode. That doesn't seem like a lot. I'm at a kind of funny place in my life right now with Big gone and Jeff gone, my sanity semi-gone. But I need to look at it as an opportunity where suddenly my social outlets are grim, but I've got time I can focus on my writing and publishing. And who knows, maybe, you know, I can turn it around. I can make a difference. I got a royalty check from Audible last month. And usually I don't look at them anymore because it's just too depressing. Another lesson that I wish I had learned a long time ago, but I decided to look at this one. And when I saw it, I was just like, what, really? That's what I made the whole month? Not just what I made in France or in all of the United Kingdom, but that's what I made in the US and I'm assuming Canada. Yeah, a little voice in the back of my mind was just like, wow, dude, you might as well have not done it. But I can't think that way. Even if I have a couple of really lean months here or there, those months continue. They add up. Even that tiny little bit that I made last month multiplied by 12 for the year is something. Buys a chimichanga or two. And so, yeah, I guess this is me saying, even though it's months late, I'm going to do my own audiobooks. And then, you know, I'll do like Abigail Hilton's work because her work is really good and she pays really well. And besides, if I do my own audio, then, you know, I don't have to split the proceeds with an author. I split the proceeds with me and I'm an author that I like. Oh, well, I still have to split the proceeds with Audible, who, somehow feel justified in taking the lion's share of the money. And, you know, maybe a stronger person than me would say, you know what, none of that either. The line must be drawn here, and I'm not going to do that anymore. And I haven't reached that point. Maybe doing my own work for a little while, and then whatever work for hire comes in. At some point, maybe I'll reach that plateau and say, okay, I'm not going to do this royalty share thing, even with my own work anymore. I don't know. The thing is, there is so much of my stuff just sitting, and that's what Big was talking about. You know, if I did one audio production of one of my pieces, stories or novellas or whatever, a month, just one a month, it would last me for the rest of my life. Now, granted, maybe I'll only live to be 50, so that's not quite as daunting a prospect. But what if I live to be 70 and it's like, wow, one project a month until I'm 70, that's a lot of stuff. And so the possibility is out there. Again, I worry that this is not an entertaining episode, but it's perhaps illuminating. Maybe you could think where your line is. At what point would you say, oh, you know what? No. Or at what point would you be like, I'm not going to do this ever again? Or do you say, I said I was going to do this. I'm going to do this, but never again after that. To me, that's kind of interesting. You know, if you sat down with a bunch of people and asked them what they would and wouldn't do, you know, like some kind of twisted game of, you know, for $10,000, would you do this? For $5,000, would you do this? For a silver dollar, would you do this? You get to know yourself in that game as well as the people around you. maybe I should stick an overshare on here. What do you guys think? As I said at the very, very beginning of this episode, I've been going through some hard times. I'm not where I want to be right now. But I'm certainly feeling a little bit more positive today than I did yesterday. And that's good. And really, I mean, sometimes you can only take it one day at a time. Do the best that you can with today and leave tomorrow. Hope that you can do well tomorrow too. I hope your tomorrow is a bright one. I hope you have a friend who encourages you, who makes you feel good about yourself. And if you don't, feel good about yourself anyway. You're worth it. I mean, you've got the good taste to listen to the Rish Outcast. That's a select few. That means you're breathing rarefied air. Well, thank you for having listened again, if there's anybody left.
Feel free to comment if you'd like. It would be fun to interact with more listeners than I currently do. I've been Rish Outfield. Don't be a sellout. Go your own way. To thine own audiobooks be true.
Good night.
The Rish Outcast just happens to be produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. I don't really know what that means, and I'm betting that you don't either. Why don't you support the show with our Patreon fund over at patreon.com? Have a nice night.
All is quiet on New Year's Day. Since none of them had driver's licenses, It would take quite a while to make it to the side of Ridgefield where the Lemley house was located. Somebody bought a Death Trooper. You in the future know whether that movie's any good or not.
I sure hope it was.
All is quiet on New Year's Day. Chalupa's yummy. That's what I say. Typo! Dave gently pushed the door to a closed position, but didn't close it all the way. Rob wondered why he did that, but didn't dare ask. Could be that he didn't want to attract attention if someone saw the door open. But maybe he was afraid of getting locked in, or not leaving them an escape route. She sidled close to the tall boy, their arms brushing enough to make her heartbeat triple. Their arms brushing enough to make her heart rate triple. She forced herself into a heroic stance. Why does that sound strange? Heroic. She forced herself into a heroic stance. Rob exhaled deeply.